This is Jim Inkster coming today on the show. Busy Friday. Stephen Andes, assistant professor of history at LSU and an expert on the Vatican and Latin America, will be here to talk about the big week with the installation of Pope Francis from Argentina. Also, Jan Moeller from the Louisiana Budget Project on latest events, and also the Gridiron Show this weekend in Baton Rouge. And yesterday was a big day regarding news from the Jindal administration announcing the termination of a Medicaid contract with CNSI after it was revealed that there is an ongoing grand jury investigation. Sophie Coonan from Occupy Baton Rouge will be with us, and we'll also hear from Anam Tubton, the Tibetan monk who's in town. All this, now the news. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your local number. And if you're calling outside the Baton Rouge area, it's 877-217-5757. You may reach us by email, inkstershow@wrkf.org. We begin with Dr. Stephen Andes. He is a professor of history at Louisiana State University in his first year and a graduate PhD from Oxford University, well-educated man. Bobby Jindal once went to school there, didn't he?
I didn't know him then.
No, but you come from good stock, and you're an expert on the Vatican and Latin America, and that's pertinent now with the installation of Pope Francis the First. What's your take on what happened this week in Rome?
Well, Jim, thanks for having me. It was definitely a shock to me have heard about Benedict XVI's retirement. Obviously, this is sort of unprecedented. There's been some that's happened before, but you know, not in quite some time. So when Pope Francis came out, and I found out it was a Latin American, on one hand, I was overjoyed, right? This is what I study. On the other hand, I realized, shoot, now I have to write about this. now I have to, you know, sort of put on hold some of my other projects and probably focus a little bit more on this. But I think everybody was sort of taken aback by his unassuming manner, the fact that he came out and said, brothers and sisters, apparently you've gone to the far side of the world to bring me here. And so I think a lot of the news reports, a lot of Vatican watchers are very astounded by his unassuming manner, his humility, the fact that as Archbishop of Buenos Aires, he rode the bus to work. You know, he cooks his own meals. After the conclave ended, he rode the bus back with the other cardinals, picked up his tab at the place where he was staying. So perhaps it gives us some signs of some shifts in the mentality and sort of the vision of the next papacy.
It is interesting. He rode the bus to work. Adam Knapp, who's the head of the Baton Rouge Area Chamber, who led the fight successfully for the bus tax, revealed on this show that he's never ridden the bus in Baton Rouge now. But the Pope rides the bus.
The Pope?
Now he'd be riding a different kind of bus, right? One of those protected things?
Well, but then again, in his inauguration on Tuesday, he refused to ride in the bulletproof Pope Mobile. He was out there in the crowd, sort of like John Paul II, kissing babies, you know, shaking hands. Yeah. He got down from the Jeep that he was riding in to go and bless a disabled man in the front row. And so I think all of these things were positive signs for the frankly horrible public relations that the papacy's had in the last few years.
297-5633. We'll spend a few minutes with Stephen Andes, professor of history at Louisiana State University in his first year after getting his PhD at Oxford University. What was the focus of your dissertation?
Well, the focus of my dissertation looked at Vatican policy towards Latin America in the early part of the 20th century, essentially during a very revolutionary age. You have the Mexican Revolution, you had tumult, you had social chaos, you had workers' movements, and basically I was trying to ascertain what the papacy made of this and what steps it was trying to take to get a hold on the kind of Catholic activism mm-hmm. that went in very political directions. In Mexico, you had a Catholic insurgency, a war against the Mexican government in the late 1920s called the Cristero Rebellion, where some 90,000 combatants died on both sides. And so you have basically Catholics in arms against a government, and what is the papacy to do? And so I looked at Vatican diplomacy during that period.
Now, it's estimated that 40% of the world's 1.2 billion Roman Catholics live in Latin America. So it would seem that this is a choice that is long overdue.
Yes, I agree. And I was just reading that although 40% of the world's Catholics are in Latin America, only 16% of the parishes and only 17% of the priests are in that part of the world. And so I think Pope Francis faces a situation where he had a first, row seat to this situation of an understaffed, understaffed church and mm-hmm. The problems that comes with that, and how is he going to deal with that in terms of organization? And so I think there's some big challenges there to face that sort of rising global church in the South.
Now, he's also from the Jesuit order. That's significant too, isn't it?
First Jesuit pope. He was the first Jesuit archbishop in Argentina as well. I think, you know, he brings with him a pedigree that within the Jesuits that is intellectual, that understands the sort of complexity of life. They live amongst mm-hmm. the people. They're missionaries. They deal with the day-to-day of what it means to bring the message of Christ to the world, right? And so I think those are potentially positive things that will help him to be a pope.
He's 76 years old. It would seem that there would be a shelf life on his ability to lead the church. In fact, Benedict is the third oldest pope of all time. And he had to check out early. Some thought the church might select someone younger.
I think so. However, one of an older pope that recently served, John the 23rd, and who became pope in 1958, is probably one of the most important popes for the 20th century, in that he called the Second Vatican Council. And so I think Among many of the College of Cardinals, they realized that important decisions could be made by an older pope to bring reform. And also there's problems that come with a very long-serving pope, such as Pius IX in the 19th century, who served 30-some-odd years, or even John Paul II. This sort of long papacy, I think, comes with its own set of difficulties and problems, as with a transitional one.
Daryl on Florida Boulevard. Daryl, you're on with Dr. Andes from LSU. Hi, Daryl.
Yeah. How you doing this morning? I had a question, and that was with the liberation theology movement that was very popular in Latin America. What was the justification of the Catholic Church opposing that liberation theology movement?
Daryl, that's a great question. I think in understanding liberation theology, you have to set it within the context of Latin America at that time. You have insurgencies, revolutionary movements, oftentimes led by Marxists. You have military governments that are trying to crack down on so-called subversives, leftists, radicals. You have United States policy that is trying to promote democracy in the region, and even cooperating oftentimes with military repression to keep that leftist subversive element out. And so liberation theology comes into this context where it was a rethinking of the gospel in light of the social situation in Latin America. And oftentimes there was a sense of using Marxist analysis to understand the social situation, where class conflict then was looked at as something that could be used as a way to bring about liberation for the poor. And so many people within the church, although they wanted to side with the poor to bring sort of a liberation, they were skeptical of the political aspects of many liberation theologians. And so that was part of the justification among many, and Pope Francis, I think, was part of that, that were skeptical of liberation theology's commitment to certain political movements, to certain even revolutionary movements.
All right. Well, Dr. Andes, we look forward to visiting with you again, and it's very nice to meet you in the past week, and in the same week that the world gets a pope, LSU gets a king, King Alexander, and that's the buzz on campus right now, I'm sure.
That's right. I got all the emails.
Mm-hmm. So we'll see how the king does at the old war school. But thank you, sir. Good to visit with you. And nice to see you on Chime Street the other day. That's how we schedule shows. I bump into people on Chime Street. 297-5633 is your number, and we switch gears. And Jan Moeller, who's head of the Louisiana Budget Project, is in studio, and he's wearing a few hats this morning. And tonight he'll be wearing probably all kinds of outfits. He's front and center at the Gridiron Show. Good morning.
Good morning, Jim, and thanks for having me here, and thanks for giving me a couple of minutes to talk about the Gridiron Show.
So you've played the governor in the past.
I have played the governor in the past, but we have Jeremy White of Red Stick Magazine who's playing him this year. He's been playing him very well for the past few years. But I play a number of roles, and so do most of the members of the cast, and we're looking forward to a great show tonight and tomorrow night.
Tonight and tomorrow night. It's always a Friday-Saturday thing. The governor usually comes on Friday night.
Yes. The governor, past governors usually came on Saturday nights. We used to call the Friday night show the dress rehearsal, and the Saturday night show was the main show. But this governor prefers to come on Friday nights, so the show has changed a little bit. But we are very grateful that he and his staff show up every year, because a lot of the skits mm-hmm. and songs, of course, make fun of the governor. But he's a very good sport about it. And, of course, he gets a few minutes after the show to give his response to what he's just heard. So.
Is he really a good sport? Most governors at least act like they're good sports, but I would imagine some of those jokes are a bit piercing.
I would imagine so, but if he's upset about it, he doesn't let it show, and we're just very grateful mm-hmm. that he and his staff come out. They buy tickets. This, of course, is a charitable show. Tickets are $25, and they're still available if anybody's interested. But we appreciate it. The money that we raise after we pay our bills goes to support scholarships for journalism students and also to public broadcasting,
WRKF has benefited, I know, from past shows, hopefully from this show as well.
Absolutely, absolutely.
All right, it's at the American Legion Hall. Your start time is...
Doors open at 6:30, curtains are at 7:45 p.m., and if anybody wants tickets, they should call Marjorie Haston, and her number is 337-1169. Tickets are still available for both nights, and we would love to have you come out and watch the Capitol Correspondents Association poke some gentle fun at not just the governor, but other statewide elected officials and the legislature mm-hmm. and even the media. We had a lot of changes in the media this year, as you know, and we don't exempt ourselves from criticism or right.
The
parody.
The Gridiron Show in Baton Rouge, I think, is perhaps the longest running in the country.
Yes, this is the 62nd consecutive year we're doing this. Only the 10th year for me, and I still feel like a rookie mm-hmm. sometimes because many of the cast members have been doing this for a long time. But, yes, we do believe we're the longest-running, consecutively running Gridiron Show at the state level in the country.
But unlike most other Gridiron Shows around the country, most of the performers are not members of the media. They may be former members of the media like you, but very few of them are actually working media.
Well, it's a good number of press row. I mean, it is everybody who's in the show has worked in the Capitol Press Corps at some point. But as you know, the ranks of reporters on press row is shrinking a little bit the
now,
last
why is
few
that
years.
Why is that happening, Jan Moeller?
Oh, that's probably a subject for another show. But
is it money?
It could have something with money, and it could have something with... But it's a wonderful job, and I miss it in many ways, although I enjoy what I'm doing now as well.
Will Smiley Anders take his shirt off tonight?
Smiley Anders is in several wonderful sight gags.
And he's still a member of the media, so Smiley will be there.
Absolutely.
And we'll talk more with Jan and talk more about other things when we return. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. Kevin Gallagher is producing, and we rejoin Jan Mohr, formerly the man who was covering state politics in the state capitol for the New Orleans Times-Picayune. How many years?
I spent almost 9 years at the Picayune.
9 years. Man from Pittsburgh.
Yep.
Yeah. The long-suffering Pirates, will they have a winning season this year?
There's always hope in the spring, so, and I'm sure I'll be disappointed by August.
They haven't had a winning season since Barry Bonds was playing for them.
1992,
right?
When Sid Bream slid into home base.
So, 21 years for...
This was pre-steroids, Barry Bonds.
Yeah, Barry was lean and mean when he was played for the Pirates. He wasn't hitting as many home runs either.
No, he was
batting
leadoff,
stealing a lot of bases. But he was the greatest player of his generation, and he went off to San Francisco and hit 586 home runs for the Giants.
And that was the end of the Pirates.
There you go. Well, Jan Mohr tonight will be talking about other things, I'm sure. Speaking of sports, usually there's some segments on Les Miles and the LSU types. I would hope that's the case tonight.
There will be some LSU skits. There will be some Saints skits. We do address the lights in the Superdome as one of the skits. I don't want to give too much away, but we try to keep it, we try to skewer everybody and every subject that made the news.
All right. Well, it's tonight and tomorrow night. Showtime 7:45, but people start gathering around 6:30 at the American Legion Hall on Florida.
And you can bring your food. So if you want to make a
picnic
out of it,
for both nights,
you can bring your food, and there's a cash bar at the Legion. So it's a fun and not too expensive night out.
All right, and if you'd like more information, 225-337-1169. Did want to note that the Southern Jaguars really played fantastically in the NCAA tournament, losing to powerful Gonzaga in the opening round, 58, six-point loss for the Jaguars, who had a spectacular season and went against the number one seed in the regional in which they were seated. And it is a fine year for Southern University. And tomorrow at St. Francis Xavier Church, there will be services for attorney Wilbert Jordan, who died last week. He was the first African-American to play in a collegiate sport on the varsity in Mississippi at a segregated university. He did so for Southern Mississippi as a basketball player and was a good man, fine lawyer, and he died last week at the age of 62. In studio with Jan Mohr now are Mike Stagg and Sophie Kunin. Last time Sophie was with us, she was representing Occupy Baton Rouge, and Mike Stagg, last time he talked with us, was with the Democratic Party. I think they're both associated with those groups right now, but they are here with Forward Louisiana, and they're going to talk about some matters of which Jan Mohr is actively engaged as head of the Louisiana Budget Project. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
All right. Sophie, Occupy Baton Rouge, is it still in existence?
Yeah, it definitely is. We're going through a bit of a strategic planning phase, so...
What does that mean?
We've stepped back from the public a little bit, but we're definitely still there. You can check out our website, and people get involved.
So how does Forward Louisiana spring up? Is this like spring forward, fall back? Is it a flash in the pan, or is this for the long haul?
We're an initiative of Louisiana Progress Action Fund, which is a 501c4. And last summer, there was a series of conversations that were started by Louisiana Progress about communications among progressive organizations. And I ended up sitting in one of those meetings and sitting in two others, and it led to some conversations about how really sort of the changes y'all were talking about in the media, it's more important now for NGOs and nonprofits and other organizations to be able to drive their own media and drive their own narrative, and that's where this came from. And so we're using video and social media tools to put human faces on policy choices.
All right. Well, what are you doing regarding the Medicaid situation right now? I understand you're up in arms about this. Why are you hot and bothered about the governor's choices on Medicaid?
Want to go? Well, for one thing, this is a huge win.
What does that mean? You were about to leave when you said
no.
I was
going to see if Sophie wanted to talk about it. But this would be a huge win for Louisiana. Over 400,000 people would get...
A huge win if the state accepted the federal money, right?
Well, it might turn out to be a plea bargain. We might take it as part of a plea bargain over the Medicaid contract. That's a joke, of course. But the 400,000 Louisiana citizens could get health insurance coverage. And in our state, I used to work for a little company, a little healthcare company that did primary healthcare research. And we have exceptionally high incidence of chronic disease. We also have high mortality rates. That's because people do not get their chronic diseases diagnosed early, and as a result, they die earlier.
All right.
That's a lack of access to care.
Sophie, what is your thinking on this? I would imagine it's somewhat similar to Mike's.
Yeah, I think it's pretty simple. Medicaid expansion would be great for Louisiana. It would save lives, it would save money, and it would save jobs. It would provide a path of sustainability for the LSU hospital system, which Jindal has cut
the budget up significantly. Now, Governor Jindal has drawn a line in the sand, Jan Moeller. Is that line going to move? Will it move tonight in the Gridiron Show?
It's not going to move tonight in the Gridiron Show, but the governor has a great opportunity, like Mike said, to cover 400,000 people. All he has to do is tell the federal government that he wants to accept this federal money that's being available to expand the Medicaid program up to cover low-income adults, most of whom have jobs and currently don't have health insurance. So, again, the money from the federal government would not come with any state match attached for the first 3 years. After that, the state would have to start contributing a little bit, but never more than 10%. So this is a great opportunity to cover a population that in Louisiana does not have coverage. One in four Louisiana adults right now is uninsured. And when you're uninsured, like Mike said, that means you have much higher mortality rates, much less access to care. And if you have a medical emergency, it often means bankruptcy because you're still going to go to the hospital, you're still going to get treated, but you're probably going to end up with bills that you can't afford to pay.
297-5633 is your number, and Mike Stagg, Sophie Kunin, and Jan Moeller are here, and we will hit them with a few topics. And speaking of Medicaid, yesterday the Commissioner of Administration, Christy Nichols, announced that the state is terminating the CNSI contract, the company that would be handling Medicaid for well over $100 million, and the former employer of the Secretary of Health. And it came within minutes of a report that there was a grand jury investigation going on regarding this contract led by U.S. Attorney Don Cashew of Baton Rouge. Kind of a curious timing on this, Jan Moeller. What do you think?
Well, it looks like the administration got out ahead of this. I only know what I read in the newspaper about this. My understanding is that Secretary Greenstein worked for this company, but it was in the mid-90s, and he says he recused himself when this contract was being awarded. I have no reason to doubt that, but it's certainly not a good time or a good thing when the grand jury and the U.S. Attorney's Office start sniffing around your Medicaid program. It looks like the administration realized this and got out ahead of it as soon as it was reported.
All right, Mike
Stagg, we'll have to see what happens.
Do you think this will be a one-day story or will it be a one-year story?
I think it's a long story. I mean, it turns out that, at least according to the story I read in The Advocate, Secretary Greenstein was actually involved in the changing of the criteria of the proposal that allowed his former employer to actually qualify for the bid. So he was involved. And, you know, I think the fact that the administration acted so quickly, I mean, I don't know if they're trying to throw him under the bus or if they're trying to, you know, but they took the contracting power away from DHH on this. So I think, you know, something's up. They feel an incredible amount of heat on this, and I think it, you know, the governor's already got problems on his poll numbers are down. The hospital plans that he's implementing are not well thought out. They're hastily negotiated. They raise real concerns with people who depend on those hospitals, and I think this is, you know, this just further undermines their credibility on the whole healthcare issue, which is so central to the debate that'll be coming up in the legislature.
What about the tax swap that the governor is proposing? Do all these stories have noise that will contribute to some problems in getting those endorsed by the Louisiana legislature?
Well, I agree with Representative Stephen Artigo that the tax discussion is a diversion from the problems in higher education and the problems in healthcare.
All right. Bill on Highland. Bill, good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning. A point I believe your guests are making, but which needs to be emphasized, is that what the governor's done to the hospitals, the public hospitals, is a matter of choice. It's something he wants to do. The mindset of him on his base is that these hospitals are a bad thing, and giving health care to these people is a bad thing, and closing them is a good thing. So we need to understand that. This is not a matter of necessity. It's a choice.
All right. Now, the governor, I don't think, is eager to shut down health care for people, but mm-hmm. some would say the actions that he's taking may have that as the end result. Is there a political consequence to this? Do people really care?
That remains to be seen, and I think the caller is right. Rahm Emanuel once said that you should never let a good crisis go to waste, and I think that's what the governor did in this state, in this case, where the state was faced with a decrease in federal Medicaid funding, and rather than spread out that decrease over the entire Medicaid program, the administration chose to take all that money out of the public hospitals, which, of course, set the wheels in motion to essentially dismantle this system we've had for 80 years that provides health care for the uninsured and the poor in this state. And like Mike said, we have no idea what's going to take mm-hmm. its place because those negotiations are ongoing and they're running out of time, frankly. This budget, there is no money for six of the seven South Louisiana public hospitals in this year's budget. We're about 3 months away from the start of the fiscal year, and we have no idea what arrangements are going to take their place. We have some idea here in Baton Rouge because Our Lady of the Lake is going to take over right. some of those services. But in all the other hospitals, we just don't know what this is going to look like, and we have no guarantees that the people who are being served now are going to be served starting July 1st.
Now, the governor, I don't think, has contempt for people. I think he likes people, but he has contempt for organizations. In fact, when you went to work for the Louisiana Budget Project, he ridiculed you, didn't he?
Well, the governor's entitled to his opinion, and
didn't he publicly ridicule you?
He's probably not a big fan of the Louisiana Budget Project, but that's his decision, and we're going to keep speaking out about the issues we think are important.
Well, and that's your doing, and there are many groups who are lining up opposed to the governor's tax plan. I see even Woody Jenkins is opposed to it. So how can he get two-thirds support in the House and Senate on something like this?
Two-thirds is a tough barrier for any piece of legislation, and certainly one that would make such wholesale changes to Louisiana's tax structure and would affect everybody who pays taxes in some way, shape, or form. Some people, mostly those at mm-hmm. the very top of the income scale, would get massive tax cuts, but since this is revenue neutral, that means people further down the income scale, businesses and individuals, are going to get a tax increase, and some are going to have to radically change their way they do business. So we're going to find out a lot in the next couple of weeks when the hearings really start getting into the meat of this proposal. We're going to learn who's supports it and who opposes it. I've been struck by how few people have come out in favor of this tax plan, at least publicly so far. We've heard from some bloggers and we've heard from some right-leaning think tanks. But other than that, we really haven't heard anybody come out other than the governor's office and say this is a great thing he's doing.
All right. Is Forward Louisiana going to be involved at the Capitol come April 8th and beyond, Sophie?
Definitely. We're going to be filming the legislature every day. And we'll be posting
in the chambers or out on the streets. Where will you be doing this?
Both
filming.
Both. We'll be in the chambers. We'll be interviewing them outside of the Capitol because the public needs to be informed and civically engaged. And
well, with all these interest groups that the governor has sparked the ire of over the last year, teachers, state workers, now just about anybody who pays taxes, it would seem that there would be more of a public outcry if there was really a hostility toward the governor and his plan. Why hasn't there been more action from groups like Occupy Baton Rouge? Why are people, for the most part, apathetic about this? What do you think, Mike?
Well, there hadn't been a plan. There's no plan laid out. I mean, what's been laid out is not even revenue neutral. the headline yesterday is $650 million short. So really, you're $2 billion in the hole going into the budget. The $1.3 billion that was already there, the $650 mm-hmm. million that his numbers don't add up. So I just don't think people take this seriously. It's not a serious plan. They haven't been able to put together any detailed proposal. They don't have a bill. They it's a grab bag of ideas. And I want to go back though to this to the hospitals for 1 second to point out that the agreement in Baton Rouge that was negotiated by Fred Cerise and others to replace Earl K. Long is collapsing as we speak. That elective gynecological services at Woman's Hospital have been cut by the state. This goes back before the mid-year budget cuts. That is an agreement they signed off on. And what we have them doing now is rushing through to try to negotiate deals in other markets that nobody's even seen the agreements. And there's no provision for care for the uninsured in any of the MOUs that have been publicized so far.
All right. Well, as far as the tax plan, the Public Affairs Research Council has issued a report saying that the numbers right now don't come out right. That it's not revenue neutral. In fact, it's out of balance by at least $500 million. Jan, is that consistent with your findings?
I think their findings were absolutely on point. I think they found two things. They found that some of their estimates, the administration's estimates for the revenues they plan to raise, are wildly optimistic. For example, they think we're going to get $370 million from raising the cigarette tax by $1.05 per pack. Most estimates have that number at a little bit more than half of that amount. And they also think we're going to lose less revenue than we actually will lose from eliminating the income tax. So you have a plan that's supposed to be revenue neutral. It's supposed to raise as much in new taxes as it cuts in existing taxes. But our concern, like Parr's concern, is that it's going to start out revenue negative, and it's going to keep getting more revenue negative as the years go on. So we've had 5 straight years of deep shortfalls and deep budget cuts, and our concern is that this is going to make those problems worse. And the cuts we've seen to higher education, to health care, to critical services are just going to keep getting worse if this tax plan becomes law.
And quite curiously, Robert Travis Scott, former boss to Jan Moeller, runs PAR now, and Jan Moeller runs the Louisiana Budget Project. They both worked on the front lines at the Capitol for the Times-Picayune.
And there was no collaboration on this report. He does his thing, and we do ours. We're good friends, but when it comes to this stuff, we're independent of each other, and we're both looking at the same numbers and I think reaching sometimes mm-hmm. similar conclusions, sometimes different conclusions.
And Jan Moeller and several former journalists will be on stage tonight and tomorrow night at the Gridiron Show on Florida Boulevard at the American Legion Hall. We'll talk more with Jan and with Mike Stagg and Sophie Kunin in just a moment. And also hear from Anam Tubton, the Tibetan monk who comes in and says hello about once a year. And we're glad he's here in Baton Rouge. And we'll talk with him about what's going on in his world. All this after this 90-second pause on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. Sophie Kunin, Mike Stagg from Forward Louisiana, and Jan Moeller from the Louisiana Budget Project are with us. Bill on Goodwood. Bill, good morning. You're on the air with our guests.
Hello. All the talk has been about whether the governor's program is revenue neutral or not, and to me, that is almost totally irrelevant. I mean, what the discussion really should be is what the effect is going to be and why is he doing it. I mean, if it's revenue neutral, what's the point in even doing it? The only reason I can see is for redistribution of the tax burden, and a sales tax is a consumption tax, and it's very regressive, and it hurts the poor much worse than it hurts the wealthy. And so to me, it's just a tax break for the wealthy and the middle class and lower class. It's just a tax increase.
Well, I agree. First of all, I think the concept of revenue neutral, it should make this whole proposal, you know, dead on arrival. We go into the fiscal year with a $1.3 billion projected deficit. where is the money going to, where are those cuts going to be made? They'll be made where they've been made historically before. And that means higher education. That means tuitions will rise on every campus. It means also that there'll be further cuts in health care. And, you know, I just think these are untenable things. If you look at what's happened at tuition in Louisiana colleges during the Jindal tenure, the reduction of state support for higher education from 70% down to 35%. Basically, all that the tuition burden's gone on to families just to keep the lights on, not to make those a better institution.
Marie on Independence Boulevard. Good morning, Marie. You're on with Jan and Mike and Sophie.
Hi. It's somewhat to do with your gridiron, but also just an observation about the governor. The previous guest said that he was a good sport about the gridiron through all these years, and that if they think about it, the governor hasn't been real cooperative or met with the local and state media since he was the governor.
Well, could there be repercussions? Of course, as I said, many of these people who are on stage, they work for the governor. They are employees of the governor of Louisiana. So the governor take it out on somebody for something that happened at the Gridiron Show?
I've never known this governor or any other governor to retaliate against Gridiron cast members. And again, we very much appreciate the governor coming to the show every year, buying tickets, and sitting at the head table. I don't think any of us would feel altogether great about sitting there and watching people who cover us make fun of us for 2 hours and poke fun at our mistakes and our foibles. And so we deeply appreciate the governor coming, and we hope people come out and see the show and see his response.
Well, most people who are very smart, and this governor is extremely smart, have good senses of humor. And so I imagine for the most part the governor is laughing, but there might be a few things that that get under his skin. Buddy Romer, who's very smart, he only went to one show. He said after the first one he'd had enough, never came back, didn't want to be there. He didn't like John Hill playing him. Dominic and Grand Coteau. Hi, Dominic. You're on with Jan and Mike and Sophie.
Good morning, y'all. You know, the discussion that you're having, of course, is right on about the governor's plans. What I just want to know is, when you look across the country, and all these governors are doing these things, they're attacking the teachers' unions, they're attacking the hospitals and stuff like this. Do you think that there's a general overall game plan behind all this with policy that they're trying? You know, what do you think they're trying to do?
Sophie, you want to take that one?
Sure. There's a good bit of evidence that the American Legislative Exchange Council, ALEC, which is a conservative think tank, is behind a lot of this legislation. They've pushed for budget cuts to education, healthcare, prison privatization, you name it. ALEC is behind it.
All right. Well, we thank you for joining us today. Good luck to Mike and Sophie with Forward Louisiana and to Jan Moeller with the Louisiana Budget Project. And tonight and tomorrow night, Jan will be on stage at the Gridiron Show on Florida Boulevard, American Legion Hall. More information, 337-1169. And you say Jeremy White will be playing the governor.
Yes.
Jeremy White, Red Stick. Yeah. He's a talented man.
And there are several sight gags involving Smiley Anders. So if you want to see Smiley in funny costumes, to buy a ticket, it's $25.
And, all right. And it you will said be that once well. Before, so we know how much it costs. Go ahead, Mike.
Well, go ahead, Sophie. We have
while we have the chance, wanted to tell listeners that there is a petition asking the governor to accept the Medicaid expansion. You can find it at expandlamedicaid.org, which we've also put a good bit of information to help you learn more and get involved.
Okay. Thank you, Sophie, and thank you, Mike. And now we're joined by Anam Tubton, the Tibetan monk who has been with us a few times before and makes it a practice to come to Baton Rouge frequently. Grew up in Tibet. At an early age, he began to practice in the tradition of Tibetan Buddhism, and he will be appearing in our community this weekend. And he's brought along a friend of his, someone we know well, Nancy Jo Craig from the Capital Area Corporate Recycling Council. So we will hear from Anam Tubton. And also, we want to talk with him about what's going on in Tibet with all these people setting themselves afire and committing suicide through immolation. 297-5633 is your number. 877-217-5757. And welcome back to WRKF, Anam Tubton, who has been with us a few other times and always dresses appropriately. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. Nice to see you again.
Nice to see you. And what brings you to Baton Rouge again?
As the same reason, I have a lot of friends here. They keep inviting me to be here.
All right. One of those is Nancy Jo Craig. And I know you'll be with Anam during his visit, but you must be a follower of some sort to what he practices and preaches.
Right. Well, I've been interested in Buddhism really since my college years, and I'm not going to say how long ago that was because it's scary how long ago that was. But we're having a wonderful talk tonight at 7 o'clock at the Agame Yoga and Meditation Center. So if you're not going to the Gridiron and you want to hear a wonderful talk, it'll be at 7 o'clock tonight. About an hour-long talk.
Where is the Agame Yoga and Meditation Center?
It's 635 South Acadian Thruway. It's almost just right a block away from the Walgreens.
All right. So what is it about the Tibetan form of Buddhism that is attractive as far as going on some kind of spiritual path?
To me?
Yeah.
Oh. I first heard Anam Tubton about 4 or 5 years ago when he came down and spoke at the Unitarian Church, and he talks just very directly, and it's very normal, mm-hmm. and it's a very direct path of it's about understanding who you really are, understanding yourself.
And as I noted, Anam, 109 Tibetans have been self-immolated in the last 4 years. What's going on in your country right now?
You're right. There are a lot of political turbulences right now in my home country. Tibetans have been asking Chinese authorities to show understanding, respect to their culture. So for Chinese politicians are not paying attention to the demand of the Tibetan people. And now Tibetans have become so desperate. Maybe this is in their mind, only way that they can get attention from not only Chinese authorities, but from the international community as well. Lots of monks are burning themselves as an act of calling attention from the international community.
But for a man who preaches peace and tranquility, what a horrible way to go out, to burn yourself to death.
Yeah, it is. I would never do that. I understand why they're doing that. Philosophically, I don't support that kind of act at all. There are many other ways of doing demonstrations and political movement. Of course, I can't judge their action. Perhaps they did from their best intention. As I already stated, personally, I don't support such an act because Buddhism is all about nonviolence. Mm-hmm. Nonviolence not only towards others, but towards yourself too.
Yeah, well, the kind of personal despair that must be involved is immense to do something like this, and over 100 people have.
That's quite impressive.
Yeah, and I can't imagine, you know, in the United States, we've got one of the most violent societies on earth, and this is one of the most violent communities in the United States, but we don't have people setting each other on fire or setting themselves on fire too often.
You're right. I hope that never happened here.
Okay. 297-5633 for Anam Tubton. And Nancy Jo Craig, who is, would it be correct to call you a disciple?
Not really.
No, not
I don't have disciples. Maybe
a
friend.
I think we are friends, yes.
We're friends. So when people are followers of you, what is the proper term?
Well,
friends?
I don't think I have followers. We don't really believe in the idea of following somebody. We are all friends. That's how I regard
it. That's a nice way of putting it. As I said, this man is an impeccably dressed individual. Every time he comes in here, he's a sight to behold, and he'll be a sight to behold tonight.
And we're also having a weekend retreat. So if you can't come tonight and you want to go a little bit more in depth, it's at the same place at the Agami Yoga and Meditation Center. Saturday and Sunday from 9 to 12:30 and then 2:30 to 5. And the cost for the weekend retreat is $50 a day and lunch on your own, but nobody's turned away from lack of funds.
Pass along a couple of questions. Here's one for Anam saying, do you think that China's insistence on controlling Tibet has anything to do with controlling the great rivers that originate in Tibet and the water they carry?
Perhaps that's one reason, but also China has been invaded by many countries throughout history, the Mongolians, Tibetans, as well, and also in Japanese. Early century, the last century, they got independent from the Manchu Empire. As a Persian, China had very low self-esteem, and now they got this power. They wanted to somehow demonstrate that they have a lot of power, self-confidence, and that's where they started invading all these neighboring countries, Mongolia, such as Tibet. Mm-hmm. This is one reason, and also Tibet has lots of natural resources. China's occupation of Tibet comes from greed, desire to expand their empire, so it has lots of motives, maybe not one thing.
And here's a question for Nancy. Are you going to videotape the talk?
I'm not sure that it's going to be videotaped. I don't think that we're that clever. We might have, should have talked to...
Yeah, there's still time to...
we might videotape.
Take care of that.
Yes. But for the moment, I don't think we're going to be... streaming it on the internet or anything.
Well, Anam is a man of immense charm and charisma and has quite a story to tell about his life path, and he will be in our community this weekend, and we thank him for making frequent visits to Baton Rouge. I can tell you stay in good physical condition. It's not only a spiritual voyage, but you must eat right and exercise. It all goes together.
Yeah, I do lots of exercise. I often ride mountain bicycles. This is what I do. This is my religious practice.
Well, the United States could learn something, and Monday we'll have Stephen Himesfield from the Pennington Center on, but we should make exercise part of our religious practices, shouldn't
definitely we? Definitely. It's the best religion because there's no war involved.
Well, the body is a temple, right?
Absolutely.
So if we don't take care of the body, we're not being good stewards of mankind, are we?
Absolutely.
So what do you say to people in the United States? We have one of the most out-of-shape countries in the world.
I don't know about that.
Not Nancy, but...
Well, he lives in California, so he doesn't see it as much.
But
I think people are pretty healthy relatively in this country.
What about diet? That's part of the reason, of course.
Diet, well, I try to be very conscious of what I eat, but I can't handle not eating cheese. I love cheese.
Cheese?
Yes.
What kind of cheese do you like?
I eat all kinds of cheese. I go to also Europe, often France, and they got the best cheese. And I forget all my health issues when I see cheese.
Do you eat red meat?
No, I have been vegetarian for quite a while.
How long?
maybe 10 years. Periodically I ate meat, but these days I'm trying very hard to be vegetarian.
Okay, and Nancy, once again, tonight?
Tonight at 7 o'clock at the Agami Yoga and Meditation Center, 635 South Acadian Thruway. If you want more information, you can call 343-7896.
343-7896. Thank you, Nancy Jo Craig. Sure. Thank you, Anam Tupton. And thank you, Kevin Gallagher, and everyone for listening. Have a great weekend. We'll be back Monday. Until then, stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at wrkf.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.